It's here and now, and a little football on the news to start this segment. Today, a judge overturned the NFL's four-game suspension of Patriots quarterback Tom Brady in the Deflategate scandal, a big win for Brady. And this week, there were reports that Sony Pictures altered its upcoming film Concussion about brain disease in pro players to avoid antagonizing the NFL, a big win for the league. Well, Sony denies this, but our next guest would not be surprised. Last year, Steve Almond's book, Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto, came out. He vowed that although a huge fan of the game, he was never going to watch it again, asking, doesn't our addiction to football foster a tolerance for violence, greed, racism, and homophobia? Well, he's now written a new afterword and joins us in the studio. And Steve, you promised to give up the game, did you?
I did. I feel like I should have one of those, a year sober kind of. I'm a year
a
sober.
Coin.
I managed to do it for a year.
You didn't watch.
I didn't watch, and it sucked. It was terrible because I love football, and I get why people love it so much. And I was a member of the church in good standing for four decades.
The leaves would turn. You'd hear far off TV. You would salivate.
Yeah, I would. I think the game is a place of refuge. And for fans in general, but I think especially for kind of guy fans, mm-hmm. it is a place where the complications and frustrations and moral duty of adult life just disappears. Poof. And you are re-immersed in those pleasures of childhood and the kind of magical thinking that prevails in childhood.
Yeah. Well, you had some success. We have a colleague who is new to the show, and he said, oh, yeah, that guy. I stopped pro football, but I couldn't stop college. And most people, I'm sorry to say it, Steve, you a lot of controversy around the country doing media.
Right.
You didn't make a dent.
I didn't. Wait,
the ratings.
Wait a minute, Robin,
are
you telling me that the NFL still exists?
The ratings were higher than ever last
yes.
season.
For me, the most fascinating moment of everything that happened in the offseason was the announcement by the NFL itself in federal court that their actuaries, in response to this massive lawsuit filed by all these former players saying, you lied and covered up the damage that is done to our brains playing this game. And they obviously want to settle it. They want no part of a trial for obvious reasons. But their actuaries estimated that 30% of players were going to wind up with long-term cognitive ailments, which is a polite way of saying brain damage. And I remember running into my wife's room, you know, and saying to her, honey, it's over. Game over. There is no business in America where the workplace produces up to a third of the employees are going to get brain damage. That's not a tenable model morally for the American people, and it's not a tenable model business-wise. I really honestly, I see you smiling at me, but I really honestly thought that's it. They spent all these years trying to keep people from realizing the profound dangers of the game, and now they themselves admit what other industry in the United States would we find that even close to acceptable?
Silly you, right?
Yes.
You write this. This is how you begin your afterword. For sure, this would be the turning point. It wasn't. Let's talk about your afterword.
Sure.
Instead, you write that outrage, and there had been, over news about the head injuries got funneled into two stories. Designated scapegoats is what you write, Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson.
What happened is that huge story about a workplace in America in 2015 where a third of the employees get brain damage, and you, by the way, watch it every Sunday, got completely wiped out by these very gratifying, seductive scandals about brutal actions that occurred off the field. And in this way, I think the fan is made to feel consistently by the media like a victim rather than what we really are, which is painful to admit, but we're the sponsors of the game.
You also seem to be saying that when Ray Rice, and who struck and knocked out his then-fiancée, and Adrian Peterson, who beat his child with a
thin branch,
when they were vilified and marched out and humiliated publicly, somehow our brains took that in as, see, football has paid for its sins.
Well, yes, that's absolutely right. It was off the field, and therefore fans could get very angry and indignant and not see any relationship to what's happening on the field. But in fact, Robin, I think about it oftentimes from the point of view of a brain. You don't know what the external context is. You just know if you're knocked senseless, you're suddenly no longer functioning. The brain inside Ray Rice's girlfriend, fiance, now wife, was knocked senseless. And we all saw that, or many people saw
got
that.
Upset.
Yeah, and were very, of course, it seemed monstrous. Brains are knocked senseless in that same exact manner every Sunday. And it's because it's in the context of football that we'll say, great. football has managed to sanitize the violence. We don't see broken bones. We don't see blood the way that you would, for instance, with boxing.
Well, your point also was that we were made to feel as if we had watched some sort of reckoning when those two men were punished, as if that reckoning somehow also punished the league for the way the game was played.
Right.
But it didn't.
Right.
Well, you go on to make other points, and this is everything that happened after your book came out,
right,
in this afterword. You talk about a radio host who quoted Ray Lewis, you know, the Hall of Famer. The context was, what if the NFL went on strike? And he kind of insinuated, well, what football does is it kind of keeps all of our violence contained through the game. If you get rid of the game of football, well, who knows what will happen?
Yeah.
Meaning what?
Meaning that in a sense, if you take football away, there's going to be rioting in the streets.
Right. Right. Our violent impulses will then go to the streets.
Right. And the truth of the matter is, our violent impulses and what our yayas are really there for us in the field. They are very much expressed in this kind of simulated form of combat. What's curious to me is that we know and hear all about, and I write a lot about and against football, what football does for us. Like, it's incredibly thrilling. But nobody really bothers to ask, what does football do to us as a moral undertaking? We know what it does for us as a form of entertainment. What does it do to us? And there are other ways in which our values are crazily distorted by the game. I mean, Robin, I can imagine you, I don't want to put you in the spot, but you're probably something of a football fan or a casual football fan, or maybe go even to a Super Bowl party, no?
I'm one of those people that, yeah, when I walk by a game, hear it wafting through the autumn air or...
See, that's not the verb I would choose, waft, but okay.
You know, but the sounds coming at you from a distance. Yeah, something gets triggered in me.
Here's the deal. There are tons of fans who are casual fans. And in fact, the NFL keeps building up a higher and higher percentage of female fans. But the values of football in terms of gender are essentially medieval. Men are defined as hyper-aggressive, big, strong guys who are dominating, and women are sexual objects who bounce on the sidelines. The values of it in terms of the way that it treats violence or militarism are wildly out of sync with most American values.
Well, and it may also have something to do with our current race issues. Mm-hmm. And here's where you write, I'm going to hear about this. So let's have at it. You draw a line from football to our stereotype of young black men in particular, especially if they are large and strong. We cheer them on the field, but are afraid of them on the streets.
Look at the case of Michael Brown or Eric Garner. These were two African-American men, in one case a teenager, who were described by and treated by law enforcement as if they had monstrous powers. In Ferguson, Michael Brown and the officer talking about being shaken around like a rag doll, and it looked like it had a devil's face, and lines that are suggesting that Michael Brown was this huge figure. Well, he was 6'5", and so was Darren Wilson. And yet there was this exaggerated sense of his menace. Eric Garner, who was a big guy, he was tackled. He clearly didn't want to have anything. You know,
he was selling cigarettes illegally.
Right, loose cigarettes. And he didn't want to have anything to do with. He just wanted to be left alone. And he was very aggressively gang tackled by four or five. And you can watch the video. And what's so eerie about it, Robin, and the connection I'm trying to draw here, the guy who tackles him and applies the fatal chokehold as he's saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, isn't wearing police blues. He's wearing a football jersey. In this country, there is a long tradition of grotesque stereotypes about African-American men and men of color that exaggerates their physical menace in order to justify violence against them. That is the line that I would draw in this rash of cases that we saw. We also use football. One of the central rationalizations that people use, and I use for years as a fan, is it's a way out for certain kids. I don't believe, and I feel this very strongly, that football is the right model for empowering communities that are disadvantaged economically and socially and educationally. I think that is a perversion of our values, which should say that every kid, that it matters because of their intellect, because of their morality, not because they get really good at playing a brutal murder ballet game that we really love watching.
So, Steve Almond, you have just launched the new line of attack on Steve Almond.
Yes, I have. Thank you for putting that in such
succinct terms. Well, because you know what happens when you draw these lines. Why is it so important to you?
I think I probably feel guilty, and I'm kind of trying to atone for it. And I'm also, in a way that I totally admit to, I can't really watch football and provide a good answer to my son or my daughters why I would watch such a thing. These guys, later on in life, players are going to wind up neurologically, you know, having cognitive ailments. And I've seen that up front in my own family. I know how devastating it is. And I can't really pretend otherwise. But, Robin, I still really want to watch the game. And so I have to kind of, from one shoulder, shout in my own ear to say, this game is really dirty and corrupt. And if you connect those dots, there's no argument to be made about it. And I have to do that really loud in order to keep myself from hearing those beautiful wafting sounds of the spectacle that are so alluring and that, you know, are at fever pitch right now.
Steve Almond, his book, Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto, which has a new afterword, as you just heard. Steve, thanks as always.
Absolutely.
So, a fan who wants to atone for his past fandom, he said a lot there. Does football add to stereotypes and fears about large black young men? Would you watch other entertainment if you knew 30% of the players would die or be brain damaged? Your thoughts, hereandnow.org.